Podcast.
The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's the ticketking.com.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to Pulse of the Pack. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf, trying to fight through some voice issues. It kind of cuts in and out, so forgive me if I sound like a teenage girl at times during today's show, but I'm going to try and fight through this to bring you guys Packers content today. Joined with me, as always, is my co-host, Jason Perrone. Jason, how's it hanging?
Everything is going well. So by sounding like a teenage girl, Jacob, do you mean you're going to swoon over the latest Justin Bieber release, or are we talking about the actual sound of your voice?
The actual sound, because I don't even know who Justin Bieber is. I kid.
Good answer.
I kid, but yes, just the sound of my voice. You will not get me to acknowledge that Justin Bieber is actually a person. Also with us, we have a guest today, and he's been with us before, so he'll be familiar to you guys. It's Justice Mosqueda. Justice, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We're out here.
All right. Welcome back. I believe the last time we had you was just before the draft, and I got to give you some credit. You nailed it. You called Kenny Clark, and that was impressive because he's not a guy that was mocked to the Packers by a lot of teams, so congratulations there. Tell us a little bit about yourself, playmaker mentality, and, you know, a chance you can describe your work and where we can find you. Give us a little bit of a refresher course.
Yeah, so for this coming year, I'm going to be doing the same work that I did last year for Bleacher Report, where I write gambling columns and NFL draft stuff for their site. And then I'll probably be doing draft content for them in the, you know, the whole draft cycle. And then I freelance and do my own stuff with Playmaker Mentality, which is just kind of like a little side site where I run like athletic measurement metrics on pass rushers and defensive linemen, which is something that Ted Thompson looks at. Not my stuff, but it's something that, you know, he pretty obviously takes into account when he's drafting these guys in the front seven, which is why I was able to pin down a guy like Kenny Clark, where I was like, hey, you guys, look, he's like the youngest person ever, and he's crazy explosive and very fat. And that's exactly what Ted Thompson is going to go for in the first round every time when he gets a chance.
Interesting stuff. I love to read it every year when the offseason hits, because, and especially this upcoming offseason, the Packers should be looking into more of those kinds of guys with the situation at the edge rusher position. So looking forward to that stuff. But today we're going to talk about the actual 90-man, which is now down to, I think, 89. The only release that I've seen today was wide receiver Ed Williams. But whoever's on the current roster, I just kind of want to go through some stuff with you here. Justice, you know, the first thing, as always, the wide receiver position was the most important and the most talked about battle. Maybe not the most important, but certainly the most talked about battle this offseason. And Jason and I have discussed it several times already. I believe at the beginning of training camp, or at some point in the offseason, you had written something about the people's champ, Jeff Janis, and he's obviously in this discussion as well. But, you know, how do you see this playing out with Trevor Davis? And Geronimo Allison's been a big surprise. You know, when it's all said and done, what do you think the Packers do at their receiver spot? How many guys are they keeping, and how difficult are some of these cuts going to be?
Yeah, that was always the weird thing to me. Really, once the Geronimo Allison stuff started, because that happened like right before the preseason, I want to say, where people really started kind of being like, hey, look, this guy's kind of breaking out in practice. And I was like, man, there's really no room. Like right now, he's probably even if he does, you know, put himself head and shoulders above the other undrafted free agent rookies on that team, he's like the eighth receiver on that team. Because you got Jordan Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devonta Adams looks like he's getting every opportunity to lock down that third wide receiver spot. Jared Aberderis is doing solid competing for that spot. You got Jeff Dennis and Ty Montgomery and then Trevor Davis, and all three of those guys can contribute on special teams. So it's like to think that an undrafted guy was going to be able to break into that group, I just couldn't see it because there's just so many bodies there. As far as everything shaking out,
it's kind of a weird situation that the Packers receivers are in because their the back end of their DB unit is probably weaker than we have seen in I don't know how many years. I mean, usually you take on about 10 DBs or so, and there's just not 10 DBs on this. You know, there's not 10 guys who have their roster spot secured in on this roster, which means, okay, if you go a little short on that, especially taking into account of the suspension of Goodson, if you were to go short on cornerbacks, the position that you would want to take extra guys on would be receivers because those are the same type of bodies, and those are the type of guys who could be fielded on special teams. So I think they could go a little over on receiver, but the question is how much is over? Because I think over would be six receivers, and right now they got seven, and that's not even including a guy like Geronimo Allison who could end up on the practice squad. I have no idea. I guess I would say gun to my head. It really comes down to how sold are they on Jeff Janis as a return man, because if they're not sold on him as a return man, I think he's the guy who's, you know, out. I don't think that you could cut ties with a guy like Trevor Davis so fast when Trevor Davis is the guy who has a chance to be a legitimate deep threat and played in basically two gimmick offenses at Hawaii and at the University of California. So it's not like he's really been given a chance, whereas like Jeff Janis, he's in year three. I think they'd rather, you know, try to develop Trevor Davis in the next 2 years rather than just hope that, you know, something clicks with Jeff Janis because it just hasn't been there yet.
Hey, Justice, it's Jason. Thanks for coming on. Always good to chat with you. And so to take that a step further, because I agree with a lot of the points that you made there, do you think, knowing what you've seen from Allison and the chatter that's going on around, I mean, you're very connected to a lot of other NFL analysts, those that cover the league, do you think the Packers would be able to successfully keep Allison on the practice squad if that's where he ends up?
I think so, because he hasn't really cracked against anyone. And I mean, I think the guys that you have to worry about a lot more are the guys that you draft, which it sounds silly, right? But the fact that he wasn't drafted means that every single team passed up on him. You know what I mean? Like, passed up on him seven times. I think he's the type of guy who could end up on a practice squad. Yeah, I don't think that he's gonna end up on because he doesn't really bring much as a return man or anything like that. So if he's gonna be a low end roster guy, you kind of want to play him, or he's just gonna be an inactive. And I don't really see why a team would go that route.
Yeah, and I ask that question more for our fan base because, you know, Packers fans listen to Packers coverage, so. As you're watching
right.
preseason games and you're listening to all the podcasts and all the analysis afterwards, there's a lot of opinions on these players. He gets a lot of praise. One thing that kept coming up was how well he came back for the football. You don't see that out of a lot of rookies and things like that. So fans sometimes, I think, get a little bit nervous about, you know, because their value of a player is probably a lot higher than maybe some of the other teams in the league. Like you said, he was passed up seven times by 31 other teams, or 32 teams, actually. So there's some logic in that, obviously, and so I think that was a little bit more for the fan base to just kind of answer that question from an outsider's perspective. But, you know, you talked about Kenny Clark moving to the defensive side of the ball for a second here. You know, he didn't play against San Francisco because he's nursing that back injury. But from what you've gathered so far, from what we have seen of him in practice and in the first couple preseason games, you know, are you okay as far as what we can expect from him to contribute to this defense when the regular season starts, just given that he's so young, he's a rookie, he's new, all these things kind of working against him, and now he's not getting a chance to participate in these last couple preseason games. is he ready to go? Is he ready to play some meaningful snaps? Or do you think there's going to be still a little bit of a break-in period, maybe that first quarter of the season?
Yeah, so when I was watching Clark, I mean, the cliches that you'd expect from a crazy athletic, you know, 20-year-old nose tackle, those pretty much fit. He's very raw. There's sometimes that he's not able to hold up against, like, double teams and things like that. He ends up on the ground very often. But he's able to hold up at the point of attack. And I would say that the good thing about if you had a guy who was missing these type of reps, you'd want that guy to be on the defensive line because of how easy defensive line play is. Because really, it's you can do one of two things. I mean, Capers does a bunch of stuff where you drop into coverage even as a nose tackle. But for the most part, you do one of two things, and that's either A, I'm shooting a gap, or B, I'm attacking this man and two-gapping. So the good thing is that there doesn't really need to be there's not really any, like, in-between-the-ears developing that needs to happen, right, for defensive linemen. It's pretty basic. I mean, what you're doing at, you know, the NFL level is, like, still what you're going to be doing at, you know, the high school level. The only difference is you have to do it at a much higher grade. The thing that I would worry about Clark isn't so much early on in the season. It would be later down in the season, because I think we've seen this with guys like Dayton Jones, just these college defensive linemen who come into the game and you think they're ready, and then halfway through the year, it just looks like they've lost like 30 pounds just because they're not used to, you know, a 16-game NFL season.
Yeah, that's true on a lot of fronts there. Kenny Clark's done some nice things and certainly had some growing pains as well, and I use that, I guess, no pun intended, due to the back injury he has now. The question I have is about their second-round pick, Jason Spriggs. Obviously, he's dealing with a hand injury right now, but his first game, he was pretty solid. His second game, he kind of got schooled by Khalil Mack a little bit. But the question I have is, you know, is he looking like a left tackle in the NFL, or if he has to step in right now, because you almost know at some point Brian Bulaga is going to miss time with an injury. If he has to step in right now, how comfortable are you with Jason Spriggs as a starter?
Well, I would say that the one thing that he needs to work on is the same thing that he showed at Indiana. I mean, he's a really athletic tackle, but the issue that he's always going to have, or at least until he gets it figured out, is getting countered off of getting countered to the inside. He does a pretty bad job of, if a guy really forces and gets a good first step on him, he'll sell himself outside, which helps him shutting down that outside move, but it leaves, you know, that inside, you know, susceptible to him being crossed over and that guy crossing his face, and that's never what you want to do. I mean, the fastest line to a quarterback is with an inside move. So you really want to take that away, which is why, I mean, if you want to get down to it, that's why offensive linemen have their inside foot up in their stances, right? And that's why they kick with their back and slide with their inside. That's really the basis of that. And he hasn't proven himself consistent enough to stop inside moves at either the college level or this preseason. So I'd be kind of worried about that, but that's something that you could – I mean, basically you would have to help slide protection his way, because I think if you have him cover a gap instead of cover a man, he could do solid, because I think he's athletic enough that he can have a guy, you know, force a guy to bend around the C gap. But if you're forcing him to play a man by himself and he has to play the little game of, you know, am I gonna get countered? Am I not gonna get countered? What do I need to do? That's a lot of thinking for, you know, a guy who basically played in an air raid system at Indiana. He wouldn't be Barclay, right? He wouldn't be Don Barclay, but I wouldn't sleep easy if he were starting as my, you know, bookend on either the left or the right side.
All right. Well, I think Jacob and I can both agree to hear that he's not Don Barclay is probably a better thing than a bad thing. So thank you for that justice.
Yeah.
We will sleep a little easier tonight. Kicking back over to the defensive side of the ball, Blake Martinez, we have seen him extensively. He is not short on energy, so that's a good thing to see on film. But to the more trained eye, and I don't know if you've had a chance to really kind of hone in on what he's doing well and what he might be struggling with, but is he standing out to a trained eye as much as he would be to maybe, say, the average fan who's excited about his high motor and the fact that he seems to be picking up the defense pretty well?
Yeah, I think it's kind of weird because it looks like Sam Barrington's pretty obviously inside linebacker one, right? But then that group of three outside of Barrington and Jake Ryan, Blake Martinez, and Joe Thomas, it's kind of odd because even like a guy like Joe Thomas started flashing in the first week of the preseason this past year when he was just blowing everything up. And then, you know, Joe Thomas last year was just like a nickel linebacker. Like he was kind of like their psycho amoeba defense, whatever you want to call it. He was their like linebacker in that type of situation and then just played special teams. So it's kind of weird to see all three of these guys kind of taking a step up opposite of Sam Barrington. The thing about Martinez is Martinez isn't going to be able to cover very well, which, I mean, that's whatever. Every team in the league, I know Packers fans think that this is something that's unique to them, but every team in the league, they complain about their coverage of linebackers. So I'm not worried too much about our inside linebackers not being able to cover, especially when in this Dom Capers defense. I mean, in this Dom Capers defense, everyone has to be able to drop into coverage and everyone has to be able to blitz. That goes down to nose tackles and that goes down to outside cornerbacks. The thing with Blake Martinez is he's really good blitzing. So I think that's almost a trade-off. If this team wants to start Blake Martinez, I wouldn't be opposed to it at all. I mean, really at this point, I really don't see any difference in talent. You can see difference in attributes, but difference in overall talent between like a Jake Ryan, a Joe Thomas, and a Blake Martinez. I think for where they selected him in the fourth round, I think they're getting pretty good investment off of it.
Definitely. That's the first guy that everybody seems to have their eyes on because he's the biggest perceived weakness on the roster, you know, the inside linebacker. We've been talking about that since probably the days of Desmond Bishop. So
I was going to say,
since the Super Bowl. It's been quite some time. Packers have been relatively weak in that position ever since Desmond Bishop's leg exploded. Packers drafted two defensive linemen this year. The other one was from my hometown of Rockford, Illinois, and that's Dean Lowry. So I've got a bunch of people that ask me all the time, how's he doing? And, you know, you see a few things here or there. You know, my question is, this is kind of your forte here. And, you know, how comfortable are you with Dean Lowry stepping into a rotation with the suspension of Mike Pennell? The Packers aren't exactly very deep at this position.
Yeah, so once the whole Josh Boyd thing is what kind of led to this, right? Is Josh Boyd's injury, him being the base, you know, strong end, and then getting released after the draft. So then it became, all right, well, we need a starting left end or a starting strong side end now. On a team that was already pretty light, you know, on the defensive line. And even then, it was like they really had a bunch of nose tackle bodies with Mike Pennell, LaTroy Guyon, and Kenny Clark, right? And then they had what you would usually consider like an under tackle body in Mike Daniels and Christian Ringo. They didn't really have that big end. So by default, Dean Lowry ends up starting as the strong side end in the preseason up until this past week when Mike Pennell stepped in. But even then, Mike Pennell suspended for the first four games. So it looks like Dean Lowry is going to end up starting. When he's in at five technique, he looks solid, which is like when you're standing over a tackle, basically, and you have to two-gap him. So you're attacking an offensive lineman instead of attacking a gap. But when Dean Lowry is forced to kick inside of that, like when he's lining up in the B-gap or when he's lining up in the A-gap even, I saw them when they basically played him as a nose tackle, that's not a good sight. Because, one, for a guy of his length, he's not very big. Like, he's got to be, like, I'm looking up his height right now. At the combine, he was 6'6", 300, which 300 pounds, you know, you'd think, okay, that's a big boy. But when you're stretched out that much, your density and your center of gravity kind of changes. And also, the reason that these defensive tackles are almost never that size, I mean, you think of the best defensive tackles in the league, you think of under tackles like, you know, Aaron Donald, and you think of guys like Geno Atkins. Those guys are smaller, and the reason for that is it's easier to get, you know, correct pad leverage with that, right? Dean Lowry, when he's out there, I mean, he's getting pummeled when he's lining up inside of the tackles, which is a huge problem. I think that's more of a schematic thing, and I don't know if, you know, this team is really carrying it. you can't really tell what a team is going to run based on what they're doing in the preseason. So I wouldn't put too much emphasis on, like, hey, Tom Capers is a crazy person and he's trying to play a dude who's like a 6'6", day three rookie and has like a one tech. But Dean Lowry is not looking good inside, but he's looking solid when he's holding his own on the outside, which I would say is his ideal spot and is exactly where he should be playing at the next level. I guess it really just comes down to how Donald Capers is going to use him in the regular season, but that's not something that we're going to be able to answer at any point right now.
Okay, so in staying on the defensive side of things, and we're focusing on, obviously, the rookies that were drafted this year in terms of where they stand right now in the preseason, I think it's safe to say, maybe with the exception of Kyle Murphy, that most of these guys are going to be on the roster. I think Trevor Davis would be the other one that might be a little bit questionable, but talking with Justice Mosqueda and a playmaker mentality, and so in sticking on the defensive side, so let's talk Kyler Fackrell, because the interesting thing about Ted Thompson's drafts, the past couple of them, is the third round has been a little bit of an enigma. I think back to 2014 when he took Richard Rodgers and Kyrie Thornton in the third round, both of which were head-scratchers at the time. Richard Rodgers is still with the team, but clearly hasn't taken a hold of and is not a true number one tight end. So was he overdrafted? Kyrie Thornton isn't even playing on this team anymore, although he is still in the NFL. So you've got Kyler Fackrell, who was picked in the third round and was another guy that I don't think, unless you're maybe a you, Justice, or somebody else that's really in tune with the draft, was a known entity to a lot of Packers fans. So, you know, he's looked okay. He's fared okay against the second and third units. He's not playing much with the ones, at least in these preseason games. So is he ready to play meaningful snaps? Because he's going to be on the roster. He's definitely going to be a part of the rotation. Do you see the fundamentals from him in the limited sample size that you've got, that he's going to be able to step in and spell a Nick Perry or a Clay Matthews if he should need to, and maybe make an impact play or two each game?
So the thing about the drafting of Kyler Fackrell is it kind of cemented a trend for Ted Thompson in recent years, where he's kind of using these mid-round picks on like reclamation projects. So like Kyler Fackrell, when he was, I want to say he was a freshman, he really kind of broke out. And people were talking, you know, there's a potential first round pick out there at Utah State, and that kind of aligns with like the whole Ty Montgomery thing. I mean, Ty Montgomery was talked about as a potential first round receiver before he added all that weight his last year at Stanford, and then you know Jake Ryan last year too, who had injuries at Michigan and ended up playing at like three different positions in his college career. So I wonder if Ted Thompson moving forward is going to try to take those fallen stars in the fourth, third round type range. The thing with Fackrell's he's a solid pass rusher now. He's not what he used to be. And I think if you want to get down to it, if you want to go back and look at what he looked like against USC earlier in his career compared to what he looked like in his senior season, you'll see two very different players. The upside for Fackrell is gone now, but he's a guy who can fill a hole for you. You know, he could be like a baseline type of player, but he's never going to be anything special, which for me is kind of weird to find a spot for him on the roster. He's almost like, remember when Carl Bradford was drafted a couple years ago in the fourth round, and he was like, all right, he's going to be a pass rusher. And there just seemed to be no spots for him, and then last second he ended up getting moved to inside linebacker. That's almost how I feel with Kyle Fackrell, but I don't think he could play inside linebacker. That's the problem I have with him. He's kind of big. Kyle Fackrell's kind of an odd guy too, because I went down to the Senior Bowl in the Senior Bowl media day interviews and things like that. People were asking him if he felt more comfortable as a pass rusher or as someone who dropped into coverage, and he said he was more comfortable dropping into coverage. And this is a guy who was a former high school safety. He's now like 24 years old, so he's like he's kind of like an overaged guy who doesn't really have that big of an upside, and he's kind of playing in a loaded unit. I mean, if you want, just go down like 1 through 6 on the Packers depth chart at outside linebacker. It's like Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Nick Perry, Dayton Jones. And Dayton Jones is looking really good. Jayrone Elliott, who everyone loves, and even a guy like McCray. Like I think McCray's outplaying him right now. So like, I really have no idea what you do with Fackrell, because Fackrell, like we were talking about earlier with the receivers in Geronimo Allison, Fackrell's the type of guy who will not make a practice squad. Fackrell is the guy who's going to get picked up if he ends up getting cut. But what do you do with him? I mean, do you sit on seven outside linebackers and he's like, you know, he's a healthy and active every week? Because I'm kind of perplexed by that. And I think we'll get a better feel for that when we see who the special teamers are on for week four. That's usually a pretty good tell of who is going to make the team or not. I know who is it? Someone typically charts everyone's like 53-man roster predictions, and really the easiest way to figure out the bottom end of the roster is look in week four and try to figure out who's on special teams. And if things make sense and the numbers make sense, then that's pretty much how it's going to go.
The outside linebacker spot, I mean, a lot of depth there, but also, you know, like you said, you really want to sit on seven of those guys, and one of them may not even get onto the field. And, you know, the other thing that everybody looks to the preseason for is, because it really is a necessary evil, is the undrafted free agents. We kind of talked about Geronimo Allison earlier, but instead of asking you which undrafted free agent most likely makes the roster, and aside from Geronimo Allison, because we just talked about him, give us three or four names that should at least be in the conversation.
Yeah, so I think Demetrius Anderson makes a lot of sense, just because the team is just so light at defensive line. They really like going into camp. The two spots that I looked at and said, all right, there's going to be like a undrafted free agent has to make this team from these positions. It was always DB and interior defensive line. So a guy like Demetrius Anderson, he's been looking solid. He's been getting reps with the twos. I think he's probably going to end up making the team, at least temporarily, while Mike Pinnell is hurt, because you have to at least go three deep at that defensive line position because of how – I mean, the defensive line, you have to rotate more than any place else in the league just because it's those big guys doing crazy athletic things over and over again. Those guys just have to be subbed out quick. And right now, they don't have nine guys that are worth rostering. It's probably going to end up being like something like Guyon, Daniels, Lowry, Clark, Anderson, and Ringo. And that's only like six guys, not including Pinnell, who's on suspension. After that, I think the other guys that should be getting a look are the corners. You know, Josh Hawkins, he's probably the corner who separated himself from the others. You know, he's not really like he's not like getting Ladarius Gunter type of hype, but I think he's pretty clearly like that number one undrafted corner type. We already mentioned Jerome Miles. I mean, I'm not opposed to using a roster spot on Callahan at this point. Have you guys? I mean, I'm sure you guys are kind of in the Packers fan echo chamber, right? So, what are Packers fans saying about Joe Callahan?
I mean, a lot of the stuff I'm reading is like jokes with Marcus Ebersole about how they should trade him for a first round pick, but and clearly, I'm assuming and hoping those are in jest. But, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of under the impression that Callahan only makes the roster if Brett Hundley's ankle injury is a serious deal and he can't be ready for week one.
Well, and to piggyback off of that, I think Packers fans get excited about Callahan. He's far best guy I've heard because he throws on the run well. He throws across his body and he actually throws catchable passes. And Packers fans, you know, they get attached to these guys. They don't want them to get snatched up by another team. But obviously the Packers have to be smart about what they do with that spot.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say that would help his case to make the roster is the two suspensions, right? It would be the suspension to Mike Pinnell and then the suspension to Goodson and Hundley's injury. Because if you want a guy who you can get on the roster for – you know, temporarily for 4 weeks, and then you have an auto out for him, and you can move him on to the practice squad while every other team has already established their practice squad and doesn't really want to rock the boat. That's the way that you would do it.
Yeah, definitely. Callahan is, I don't know, I remember probably the first game and then most of the second game, I'm kind of sitting there watching him and, like, I'm tired of watching this guy run around. I want to see the receivers do a few things. And, you know, I mean, last week he really did some nice things with his arm. I know he still had some of that schoolyard stuff where he's running all over the place and throwing the ball across his body, but he made some plays with his arm. Geronimo Allison made some plays in the game. Devontae Adams had a chance for a big touchdown that he dropped. There were some others. You know, he made a nice throw up the seam to Jared Cook. He's done some good things, but ultimately I do think he's a guy that probably ends up on the practice squad and then see what you got with him next year in the preseason, assuming, you know, Brett Hundley's still around. The reps will probably be limited.
Right.
Right. So that's an interesting name because I really thought that the Packers just kind of were like, okay, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Brett Hundley are on the roster, and we brought in Joe Callahan and Marquise Williams because who really cares? We need somebody to play in these five preseason games. And
someone's got to throw out practice.
Yeah. We got these two guys, and we'll just kind of throw them out there, and whatever the hell happens, happens. But kudos to Callahan. He's made a decent run and at least a decent argument to be on a roster somewhere, even if it's not in Green Bay. And he certainly made an argument to be on a practice squad here.
Right. He kind of reminds me of, you know, early career Tolzien, if anything else. I mean, I don't think he's going to be anything special, develop anything like that. But he might, if you keep him in your system for a couple of years, he might be a guy who, in an absolute emergency, might be able to help you out a little bit.
Yeah, at least a little. You know, and one thing that Mike McCarthy always has said about Callahan is if he was a few inches taller, he would have gotten drafted. So not a bad thing there. Justice, you know, we thank you. There's a lot of content in there. We thank you for your time, obviously, actually talking about guys on the team instead of guys that could be on the team. But appreciate you coming on. One more time, go ahead, promote yourself. Where are you at? Where can we find you on Twitter? Stuff like that.
Yeah, so like I said, doing work this fall for Bleacher Report, also doing my own stuff on Playmaker Mentality. You can find me on Twitter at JUMOSQ, the Jew Mosque.
And then another question I have, you're coaching high school football. Have you guys played
yes,
the
sir.
Record?
We just went through a jamboree this past week. Oregon schools don't start until this week, so our first game is this week. We did go 6-0 in the jamboree, though, which I was pretty excited about because we're playing larger schools in Oregon and Washington. It's a 6A tier system. We're 5A. We went against four 6A teams, and we won all four of those competitions. So I'm pretty excited about this year.
Well, there you have it. In a few years, Justice Mosqueda will be the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers after winning at least six consecutive Oregon State titles. Justice, thanks for coming on. We hope to have you back sometime soon. Appreciate your time, as always. And that, yeah, like I said, hope to have you back sometime, maybe during the regular season as well.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Justice.
That was Justice Mosqueda of Bleacher Report, Playmaker Mentality, all kinds of fun stuff there from Mr. Mosqueda. Jason, I have to start the show with this, though. Now that it is just you and I, the dream, 23-0, is still alive. The Green Bay Packers beat the San Francisco 49ers. And one storyline that came out of that game, I don't want to get into it too much because this isn't a show about politics, but I do want to address it at least a little bit. Colin Kaepernick. Packers fans love him, and I say that in jest. Colin Kaepernick was spotted. Apparently this has been a thing throughout the preseason, but he was definitely spotted this time around, not standing during the national anthem. And, you know, that obviously brings about some controversy. And he said that after the game, essentially, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that he wouldn't stand for the national anthem because the American flag represents oppression of people of color. So, Jason, I will give you the floor to discuss this if you'd like. And then I'll kind of wrap it up before we move on to the game. But I know this is something important and, you know, requires some at least discussion. Is this a big deal to you, not a big deal? You know, how do you feel here?
To me personally, it's not a huge deal. And I don't say that because I don't support the troops or standing for the national anthem. I always do. I always take my hat off and sing along, because I feel strongly about that. But one thing that gets lost in this whole thing is that you've got the argument of not standing for the anthem instantly means that you don't support the flag, you don't support the troops, you're
spitting on everything that they do overseas to keep us safe and all the freedoms that they fought for us to have, one of which is freedom of speech. So it's kind of difficult because you have to really take a step back and take the emotion out of it, which is hard to do when it comes to our country and the flag. It's one of the biggest symbols of that create emotion in our lives. But when you take all of that away from it and you really step back and think about it, one of the reasons why, and one of the things that our troops have fought for and all of our, you know, forefathers and those that came before us fought for, was for us to have a choice of how we express ourselves. And this is Colin Kaepernick making a statement, and I don't know him as a person, but I don't believe in his heart that he doesn't support American troops. I don't think that's his message at all. I understand those who think it is and who feel that way and feel that it's strongly about it. But, you know, let's remember, Kaepernick was raised by white parents, and I really don't believe that he's spitting on troops. I think he basically is trying to take a stand here with the recent issues that have gone on in the U.S. with these unfortunate deaths of these black men who've been killed by the police. And then we had the huge massacre in Dallas and all those things that have prompted a bunch of opinions and protests and no shortage of words on them on social media and everywhere else in the news. And you've got athletes standing up and talking about it. It's Colin Kaepernick expressing himself. I think it's easy to not like him because some Packers fans just don't like him because of what he's done to the Packers in the past. Maybe you don't like him as a person. Maybe you hate the fact that he's got tattoos all over himself and he wears his hat sideways slightly and you don't like his smug attitude. But at the end of the day, to me, it's him expressing himself, and that's what he's trying to do. And, you know, hopefully we can focus on football here because he's a football player. I don't know him as a person, don't necessarily want to know him as a person. So to me, we can kind of end the conversation there, but that's my take on it. You know, and again, it's not a lack of support for, I'm not supporting what he's doing. I'm not saying I would do the same thing, but that's what I see as his intention and his motive.
Good stuff there, Jason. And here's my take to some degree is, you know, I'm kind of with you. You know, it's America. This is a free country. He is free to do whatever it is he feels is best as long as it doesn't infringe on someone else's rights. You know, obviously, it's a free country. We're allowed to, like you said, express yourself as much as you want. However, the one thing about this that I think a lot of people forget when it comes to something that we disagree with, we always say, did that person do anything wrong? They're free to do whatever they want to do. That's true, but I am also free to criticize him if I so choose. Now, I'm not going to overly criticize him because I don't think that's necessarily my place, because here's my thing. I'm just like you, Jason. I stand for the national anthem all the time. I take my hat off. I close my eyes. I sing along. You know, similar to what you're describing. I also can acknowledge the fact that racism is a thing across the board in the country, and that's a big deal. That's something that where I kind of think that I understand what Colin Kaepernick is trying to say, but I feel like he could have gone about it a different way, because while there are still some things that have some racially motivated things, which is really unfortunate because I've always been taught from the time I was little to not see color, just to see people. And that's kind of how I've grown up. But unfortunately, some people do still see color. But at the same time, you know, this is a country that he's protesting and a flag that he's protesting and a system he's protesting that has also allowed him to make millions of dollars to throw a football. And that's where I feel like his message isn't necessarily all wrong, but I feel like he could have done it a far different way. And that's, you know, that's how I feel about it. Feel free to chime in on that at Packer Polls. How do you feel about Colin Kaepernick and his stance against the national anthem? And the only thing I ask, please, please, please keep it civil, because something I did see after the game was Colin Kaepernick's Twitter feed. You see some stuff hoping that he breaks his leg, he tears his ACL, uses racial slurs, stuff like that. And that will not be tolerated. You will be blocked immediately and reported to Twitter for that. So if you have an opinion, feel free to share it. Just keep it clean. That's all we ask. Once the game started, there was actually some football to be played, and Aaron Rodgers played some of this football. The first possession was a little sloppy. Devontae Adams had a big play on a smoke screen that was called back because of what Rodgers called a phantom offensive pass interference play, and I felt the same way about it. But the problem is the Packers aren't going to get the benefit of the doubt on plays like that anymore because they run them so often, and teams have complained about it enough to where now they don't get the benefit of the doubt anymore. So that's how that went on the first possession. The other thing is Jared Cook continues to impress. And he looked really good with Aaron Rodgers, and he converted a third down, which is something that the tight end didn't do a lot of last year. He looks big and fast. He looks impressive. He looks okay as a blocker. I mean, I'm trying not to get overly excited about Jared Cook. I keep telling myself that every week, but then he keeps doing stuff that's awesome and gets me excited. And eventually, Rodgers would play two series. They scored a touchdown. On the second series with a touchdown pass to Randall Cobb. Good mix of run and pass on that drive. Jason, overall, you know, there were some mixed reviews on how they did, but how do you feel about how the first team offense played against the 49ers?
I was okay with it. I thought they looked pretty good. I liked the long run by Lacy, which was partially due to a nice block by Cook. You can temper your expectations on Jared Cook. I'm already excited. I like what I see. The eyeball test says he looks good. I'm writing about him for tomorrow morning's piece on Cheesehead TV. I think that Jared Cook could possibly be the ingredient that really makes this dish that is the Packers offense a winner. So he looked good. He was open a lot. Caught everything that came his way. Yeah, I think you're right, Jacob. I think the Packers are going to have to be really careful how they run their screens and really just make sure that at least – when the Zebras are around, that they're not getting on their blocks too soon. I think they'll give them a little bit of leeway because that's just the way that the offense works these days. You've got bigger defensive backs. You've got faster defensive backs. Offenses have to get more creative to try to open things up. And let's be honest, the NFL wants offense. So I think at the end of the day, they'll probably allow it more than they don't. Maybe I'll be proven wrong by how many flags get thrown against the Packers this season for that exact play. But anytime we see Devontae Adams doing something positive, whether it counts or not, is a sight for sore eyes because let's be realistic. He's on the team this year, so they're going to need things from 17. And so as far as the first team goes, I've started kind of watching the line at the snap, and I thought that they controlled the point of attack pretty well. There were some shaky mixed reviews on the offensive line and how they did. I thought they did okay. They didn't play much. I mean, I guess the first quarter is a decent amount. But I think these guys are also trying to kind of bide their energy and their effort and save it for the regular season opener and for the regular season. So they got in the end zone. Cobb got in there. It was nice to see some of the usual standbys working. But to see a tight end working in this offense again, and, you know, conjures up memories of another tight end that wore 89 back in the mid-90s by the name of Mark Shimura. Obviously, Jared Cook, a completely different type of player, but Packers fans are used to seeing that tight end as a vital piece, and I think that we might see the return of that for sure this year.
It certainly looks that way, and it's something that I'm looking forward to seeing more and more of with Aaron Rodgers. See if he's got that same rapport when the games count. There was some other stuff, too. He made some nice blocks, like I said. Eddie Lacy had another 21-yard run. He was okay. Jared Aberderis had a big touchdown from Joe Callahan. Devontae Adams dropped a touchdown. Like I said, you know, the game on Thursday was really a good mix of what his offseason has kind of been like. There's been some bad, but some good as well. And, you know, there was more good than bad in this game, but dropping the touchdown, I mean, that's the difference between a good player and a potentially great one. He's got to come up with that play. Geronimo Allison really had his first thing, first big game action. Had a couple nice catches down the field, came back to the ball. The only thing about it is, just like Justice was saying, I just don't see a spot for this guy on the roster, even though he really has performed relatively well from what I've read in practice. And in the game against the 49ers, he's been good. And the other thing about the offense was the running back position, and John Crockett hurt his shoulder, and this could open a huge door for Brandon Burks. But Jason, what I want to know is how far ahead is Crockett of Burks to begin with?
So it's a good question. Last week, I think my tone was that Crockett's the third guy, and it's his spot to lose. But after watching Burks this week, and then Crockett's got this shoulder injury, I'm just looking at that trends and what the Packers do. So this could be a huge thing for him. Remember back, I think it was in 2012, maybe 2013, when the Packers had Rajon Neal, I think that was his name, out of Tennessee. Am I getting his name right, Jacob, the running back?
Rajon Neal, yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Last year.
So he seemed like he was on his way to gaining a roster spot, and then he suffered a knee injury in a preseason game, and then he wasn't anymore. So the health could end up being the key here, but I like Burks. He's 5'9", so he's not a real big guy, and I don't necessarily know that would exclude him from doing good things for the offense if he fits in. But the way that he ran and his shiftiness there, I think if you're talking about the third guy, you're not talking about a Starks, you're not talking about your bell cow. So you could be comfortable with him in there in that third role if Crockett for some reason can't go or if he's out or ends up on injured reserve, however the Packers feel about him and if they want to protect him, what they end up doing there. So I guess to me, even before the shoulder injury, after watching them run, I don't know how the Packers feel behind closed doors, but after watching the San Francisco game, I think that competition was a lot closer than I thought. So Burks is definitely going to be one guy I'm going to be watching closely in this game Thursday night against the Chiefs, because this is going to be his last chance to really make a push for a roster spot. And if Crockett's not playing at all, then that's – and, you figure the starters aren't going to suit up. I don't even know if Starks would play. That's going to give Burks a lot of carries and a lot of time to showcase himself. And this could be another situation where, like you said with Callahan earlier, he may not be in a Green Bay uniform, but these guys know that even if they're not kept in Green Bay, they still have a chance to possibly stick on another roster. So he's running like a guy that wants to play in the NFL this year. And I don't know, I guess so far to me, he looks the part.
Yeah, he does. And, that's something that I'm watching as well, because that really is the game that maybe is the deciding factor on whether they keep Crockett or Burks. I don't know. Defensively, again, though, really the story of the game, I mean, they had the one possession where Julius Peppers got beat a couple times and the 49ers scored a touchdown. But last year, Chip Kelly's offense in Philadelphia shredded the Packers' defense. This year, they only gave up 110 yards. Same scheme, different players. I get that. But still, it's only preseason, but this defense looks like it could be really, really good. And that's exciting. The secondary was okay. The biggest thing you want to talk about there is the young defensive back stepping up. Josh Hawkins, Kentrell Bryce, Marwin Evans had an interception. Robertson Daniels, a guy the Packers like. What do you do here? I mean, the Packers really have only had about four guys that are considered a lock to make the roster, but some of these young guys have certainly earned at least a really long conversation about them, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. It's the same thing every year. You've got undrafted free agents who are going to stick on this roster. And that's why one of the reasons why we wanted to ask Justice for his take on three or four guys that could be on, because it seems like every week a new name emerges. So Kentrell Bryce has been kind of the camp darling for the duration of training camp and in the preseason at safety. And I think that it looks like, especially when you consider that Micah Hyde may or may not be back next year, it looks like he might be somebody they're going to roll the dice on and take a chance on. You've got some other defensive backs. Justice talked about the defensive back, the depth not being strong enough for them to carry as many as they have in the past. But you got guys like Josh Hawkins. Marwin Evans had a nice interception, although it was Christian Ponder. I get that. Robertson Daniels, a guy the Packers like. So just from the defensive back side of things, there's some names. He mentioned – the defensive linemen, I think they're going to probably have to go with one of those guys at least for a couple weeks until Pinnell comes back from his suspension. So once again, a good job on the undrafted free agent market again, and who knows what they do after cutdowns. There might be some other guys that they like that that they bring in. Like I said last week when we did our roster breakdown, and especially on the defensive line, I think that's one position where we could see a guy that's not even in the mix right now end up on this team because the Packers like him so much, and they end up getting cut by their previous team. So still a lot of football to be had. But as far as the defense goes, 110 yards, preseason or not, not a bad day at the office.
No, not at all. And a lot of good stuff there from the defense on that night, like I mentioned. Big play of the game there, which brings us to, I meant to do this at the beginning, and I'm sorry I failed, but the Ticket King of the game, Ticket King, our new sponsor this year. Like I said, I walked past it on the way to the stadium for the Oakland Raiders game. It's not a far walk. Order your tickets, pick them up, go cheer on the pack. But your Ticket King of the game, Jason, is whom?
So, once again, I'm going to go with Jared Cook as my Ticket King of the game, only because he looks so good in the offense, looks so comfortable, looks like he's been with this team for years, and I'm excited about him as much as I know you want to try to temper the expectations. You're probably smart to do so until they get under the lights and it matters for real, but I really like the way he played. He lined up on the outside. He's a matchup nightmare for cornerbacks and defensive backs in general. Really like what he appears to be contributing to the offense. But I have to say, for the second week in a row, and obviously it's a preseason game, but Joe Callahan's always in that mix in my head in that conversation because he just makes these plays. He's escapable, makes these throws on the run. I don't know how wise some of them are, but again, I think Davante Adams probably could have had that ball in the end zone on that drive that seemed to last what seemed to be about a half hour in real time. You know, Jacob, if you remember that drive, it just seemed like that the Packers had the ball forever. And that was another reason why I think they came out ahead. They kept their defense off the field. They kept San Francisco's defense on it. But going to go Jared Cook at tight end for my Ticket King of the game.
Okay, so you've got Jared Cook. I am going to go with Jared Abradaris. Kind of an off-the-wall selection, but he made a big touchdown reception. Essentially, the game winner, if you will, if that were a regular season game that counted, we would call that a game-winning touchdown reception in the third quarter, and I really think this is a guy that has solidified his spot on the roster, which I did not think was a possibility when the regular season, when training camp began. Jared Abradaris, he just continues to make plays. He's open. He does some stuff for him on special teams. Just a solid player, and most importantly at this point, he is healthy, and that has been a big deal in his career early on as well. So nice to see Abradaris making plays. He is my Ticket King of the game. Jason had Jared Cook with Joe Callahan kind of creeping in there as well. That brings us to questions from our Twitter followers. Christina Jenkins wants to know, we can only pick one, which undrafted free agent most likely makes this team? And I'm going to go with the guy that I have been on for a few weeks, Kentrell Price, the safety. I think he is an absolute lock to make this roster. There was a report from Bob McGinn that he was, according to some scouts, it looked like he was the best player on the field. That's something you always want to hear about a guy that's, you know, young and fighting for a roster spot. So I'm going with Kentrell Price. He's done some good things at the safety spot. I think you can make him into a contributor on special teams. That'll be fun to watch. Christina Jenkins, thank you for the question. My guy is Kentrell Price. Jason, you got a different one?
Well, it depends on if we're talking about who's most realistically going to make the roster or who I most want to make the roster. So if it's realistic and I want to be right, I got to go with you, Jacob, Kentrell Price, just because he's gotten so much playing time, special team contributions, all the signs are there that he's on the Packers' radar and he's the guy that they may likely keep. If we're talking about who I most want to be on the team, as a former receiver myself, I don't feel like you can ever have too many. If they had 9, I'd want 10. So I personally hope that the Packers can find a way to keep Geronimo Allison on this roster and use him this season. I think that he offers a dimension that they haven't had in a while, which is a tall, bigger guy. And he's already shown some smarts and the ability to play above his stature as an undrafted free agent. So I'm kind of hedging my question there a little bit. But I'd go Bryce in reality, Geronimo Allison, mostly out of desire. And then we got a last-minute question that came from John on Twitter. Thank you, John. He's at JCE0912. And, Jacob, he asks, how might Geronimo Allison fare on special teams? Is he somebody that could possibly replace Jeff Janis?
In a word, No, because Jeff Janis is a really good special teams player. You know, the thing is, Geronimo Allison, what would help him make the roster is that he is a better wide receiver than Jeff Janis is. And that, at least to some point, has proven to be true to at least some degree. But as far as special teams go, you know, Allison hasn't been on a lot of those units. He doesn't offer much in the return game. So it's hard to see him replacing Jeff Janis. I'm sure that they could find a way to use him on a unit here or there, but he certainly wouldn't be a replacement for a guy that arguably could have been a Pro Bowler as a punt gunner last season. I don't know. I mean, I know they pick a couple guys for special teams, but not really like that. But if they had him, Janis would be that guy. So that's Janis's biggest contribution to this team is as a special teams player. Allison, for as many good things as he's done, I don't think he can replace him. But that's not a bad question. Jason, what do you think on that?
Yeah, and I don't think you're, like you said, I don't think there's a comparison between Janis. I mean, Janis just did too much. He's got a huge resume on special teams. So Geronimo Allison being the replacement there would be a huge gamble and a huge downgrade, I think. I mean, we could all be wrong and end up he could end up being a great special teams player. But based off of what we know now, what we've seen, no, I don't think he's a replacement necessarily, but again, he's a guy that I wouldn't mind seeing on this roster. And if they do end up keeping an extra receiver, he's the guy right now. So, you know, not to talk down on him. I just think from a special teams perspective, and if he is the seventh guy on the roster, realistically, he's going to have to play on special teams, but I just don't see him replacing Janis at this point.
So there you have that. Thank you guys for the questions. You can send those every week at Packer Pulse. We will do our best to answer them on air, and that will wrap up today's show. The Packers take on the Kansas City Chiefs next week. Very likely to look like a skeleton crew, very similar to the first preseason game. You know, not a lot of starters, if any, as they're getting ready for the Jacksonville Jaguars. One other bit of news from today, Jordy Nelson does not expect to play in that game, so it looks like his first game back will be against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that's when you're going to see Jordy Nelson, and the majority of the starters, again, is likely against the Jacksonville Jaguars in the regular season. And, you know, we got one more preseason game to get through, and it'll be against Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City on Thursday night, September the 1st. So that will be what to watch for. And that does it, like I said, for today's show. Check out PackersTalk.com, all your latest Packers news and podcasts. I mentioned the show Twitter, at Packer Pulse. Follow me personally, I'm at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason, at Jason Perrone. We're getting close. And one other thing to remember is today is Sunday the 28th as we record. We will be back Monday, September the 5th at 7 p.m. to do our regular season show, Monday Night Football, Packer Pulse style. Talking Super Bowl champs, talking division champs, and we will go through every single game the Green Bay Packers will play this year and pick winners and see, are any of us picking the Packers to win the Super Bowl? Find out on that night, Monday, September 5th at 7 p.m. Thank you guys for listening to this version of Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.